This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hewlett.org.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. So we're glad to be here with you today. Talk a lot of sports right here on AM 870 WKAR. Later on in the show, we'll be talking with Dave Mayo from MLive.com. We'll talk about the passing of Emmanuel Stewart, and we'll talk about that. That'll be around the 140 mark. First off, we're going to have Jack Ebling on to talk about this week's Big Ten matchups, and we'll do that shortly, and we'll talk about all the things that are going on in the Big Ten. They had the media day yesterday in Chicago for the Big Ten basketball, so now basketball season is, of course, intersecting with football season at this time, and of course hockey season has already got underway. So a lot of sports going on in the world, a lot for us to talk about right here on AM 870. So let's bring in Jack Ebling and talk with him. Drew Sharp, of course, is covering the World Series, so he's still trying to make his arrangements to get back here in Michigan, so he'll be here for Game 3. But anyway, let's bring in Jack Ebling, that is, and talk about this week's Big Ten games. Jack, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine, Earl, but I think it's only fitting that the public really understand. Your listeners should know that Drew is not stuck in an airport. He is ashamed that you have caught him in the pits. And to be tied with you is a little bit damaging to his reputation. He's just trying to dodge it.
Well, he's going to try to bounce back this week. I can tell you that. I think he's made a few picks. I know that I don't think we're going to agree with, but he's gonna give it a shot though.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, let's see what do we and Alex, you can tell us what Drew's pick, because I gave him all to Alex to write them down, so he's already got Drew's picks in the books.
Right. So Drew,
Alex on top of the scores this week. Does he have this figured out, or have you bribed him again?
Oh no, I got it figured out. The NCAA already imposed sanctions against Earl, but for Drew's picks though, certainly he chooses Iowa over Northwestern. He has Indiana beating Illinois. He has Wisconsin over the Spartans. He has Minnesota over Purdue. And he's picking Ohio State over Penn State, even with Braxton Miller with his injuries. And finally, he chooses Nebraska against his own Wolverines. That's quite the pick for Drew there.
So, and you might disagree with a few of those picks, I would imagine.
Possible. That's possible. Actually, you know, you guys are both three behind. Is that right, Alex?
That's right. They're both three back.
So, you know, we're getting into the second half of the Big Ten season now. It's time for Earl to take some flyers on these
games. Well, I may give it a shot, but I'll hear yours first, and then I'll make my choices.
Oh, that's how it works now. Okay. Uh-huh. I thought being first, you got to let the other guy go first.
No. We always went that way. You know, you picked first, and whoever was first would pick first.
Well, I always picked first because I was always in first. That's what you're saying, right?
Not necessarily, but
oh, okay.
You were in first some weeks, sometimes.
Okay, all right. I'll live with whatever rules you try to impose here.
The same ones we've been having for the last 10 years.
Okay, oh, whatever.
Oh. So who do you got when we look at the games coming up? Indiana, Illinois. That could be an interesting game. I don't think it's going to be that interesting, but it could be.
Indiana, is that at Illinois?
Yep.
And Drew took?
Indiana.
I'm going to take Indiana. I just think Indiana's offense, they're on to something with this fast-paced attack. Nearly beat Michigan State, nearly beat Ohio State. I think they're due for a win, and Illinois can't get out of its own way.
Yeah, I think I make that a clean sweep. Yeah, we all have to go on with Indiana. Illinois just hasn't shown anything. I mean, they just totally, like you say, they're like a fish out of water. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now this is one I believe is going to be a toughie. Iowa at Northwestern.
Iowa at Northwestern. That is going to be tough. I just think Iowa is having trouble scoring. Northwestern can't protect a lead. So I would take the home game, home team, and whichever, whoever that was. But last week we saw Iowa can't play at home either. So I'm going to go with the Wildcats and think they'll bounce back after giving that one up to Nebraska.
Okay. Well, I know Drew said he's disappointed in how Northwestern is gone. That's, so he picked Iowa. I'm like you. I believe in the Wildcats are a pretty good team, and I think they're going to be a force and win that game. Iowa was only favored by a point, so I'm doing like you. I'm taking the Wildcats as well.
Okay.
Okay, then we have we'll probably all agree on this one. Michigan State at Wisconsin. Drew's already took Wisconsin, and I'm going to take Wisconsin. Just Michigan State can't score, as you know. They just can't score. So I'm going to go with the team they can score. Plus, it's at home, and Wisconsin plays very well at home. They've won the last seven games at games playing at Camp Randall.
What's your score on this, Earl?
I don't have a score. I'm just picking them to win.
Do you think it's going to be close? Do you think it's going to be high scoring?
Probably 6 to 10 points. Or it's a 6-point favorite, so I'll say it'd probably be around 10 points. If Michigan State could score some, then that would give me a little confidence. But, you know, since they can't score, it'll probably be in the mid-20s. I could see Wisconsin getting 30 points. That's as high as I would go. They could get in the low 30s.
Okay, I'm going to say a 3-point win for the Badgers. I think they'll win, but they won't cover. I'm looking at 17-14.
Okay, and yeah, that could, because with Michigan State not going scoring, but they can hold teams down, and that's pretty good. But as you know, Wisconsin and Michigan State, they both have such strong running games. And if one strong running game and with Wisconsin's offensive line being healthy, that could make it very, very tough for Michigan State.
It could, but I think Michigan State's run defense has been pretty good this year, and I think that'll continue. Michigan State holds Ohio State to 17 points, holds Michigan to 12 points. I think they can hold Wisconsin to under 21.
Okay. Well, now it's your team coming up. We know how much you love Purdue, and Purdue is at Minnesota.
I cut off that bandwagon last week. Just in time.
You might want to jump back on. They're playing at Minnesota. You going to jump?
All right, I'm going to do it. I'll do it one more time. I'll take Purdue one more time.
Okay, and I'm going to join you on that one. I'm going to show you I got a little confidence in Purdue as well.
And what did Drew do on that?
Did Drew pick Purdue?
He took Minnesota.
He took Minnesota. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
you and I have agreed on all this.
Yes,
things, right?
Yep. And now, probably the toughest game of them all. I mean, we got two games left, but one is really tough. That's Ohio State at Penn State. And as you already know, Matt McGloin has been playing some of the best quarterbacking in the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, you know, this is Penn State's bowl game.
Yep.
This is Penn State's season.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State would love to win this game, obviously, but its biggest game is the one at the end of the year. So at Penn State, I think it's going to be crazy. I think if Braxton is not able to – what's the latest on that?
I think he's going have you seen that? I think Braxton is going to play, I believe. From everything I've seen and read last night, it looks like he's going to play.
All right, I never do this, but I'm going to make this one half with my heart. And I'm going to take Penn State.
Okay. Well, I'll be the Lone Ranger, then I'll take the Buckeyes.
I thought Drew took the Buckeyes.
Drew took the Buckeyes too, Earl.
Oh, he did? Oh, okay. Well, shoot.
If you guys both took Ohio State, then I'm going to take Ohio State.
Yeah, so that would be three for Ohio State.
All right, I'm going to take Ohio State. I thought one of you took Penn State.
Mm-mm.
All right, I've got Ohio State. Then.
Okay, you got Ohio State, too. Well, now, who are you going to take between Michigan and Nebraska?
I'm going to take Nebraska in that game.
Yeah, that's a home game.
I think that's that game in Lincoln. Maybe I'm being naive about this, but I could still consider Michigan to be a somewhat flawed team. scored 12 points last week and needed the last second field goal to beat Michigan State at home. I think Nebraska is explosive, and Nebraska does have trouble against running quarterbacks, so I will say that. So that's something that Michigan can certainly try to exploit. But I'm going to take the Cornhuskers.
Okay, so we're all jumping on that Cornhuskers bandwagon, that's for sure. That should be a great game, though. I mean, really, it should be a very good contest. I'm sort of looking forward to just watching that game because I think it's going to be a very good one.
So you and I, do we have seven alike?
Do we have all
six alike, or are we different in one?
Are we alike on all of them?
Yeah, it looks like you guys are all the same.
Okay. You and I are the same, and then Drew is different in what?
Drew is different in two. He's got Iowa over Northwestern, then he has Minnesota over Purdue.
Yeah,
that will be the game, Jack. You're Purdue Boilermakers. You're very true Purdue Boilermakers.
Okay. So, Earl, you and I need Northwestern and Purdue, right?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is your big chance, Earl. You can create a two-game gap on Drew. He'll never come back on the show.
He might. We'll have to see on that one.
Hey, come back when the Lions win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we got a short wait for that one.
What about if the Big Ten wins a bowl game?
Yeah, well, they'll win a couple bowl games. They just won't win the one that he thinks matters. He only believes in national championship now.
Right.
Yep, we'll do that. Well, as you know, Jack, the guy who I admire, man who I admire greatly, has passed away, Emmanuel Stewart. He's
right.
The godfather of boxing in the Detroit area. And it's truly a sad loss for the sport. But, boy, what... I mean, you talk about a man who knew the sport, knew the game, and was such an excellent trainer in all of boxing. And I mean, you know, he will be sorely missed by all of us who know and really love the sport of boxing. And Emmanuel's been on the show several times. He's just been a great trainer in the sport of boxing.
What made him so exceptional, Earl?
Well, he took young guys, and one of the biggest thing for him was he never forgot his roots, his amateurs. He loved the amateurs, and even no matter how big Tommy Hearns got, Hilmer Kente got, and all the other guys who went to pros, he still kept close to the amateurs because that was his life. He was a great amateur boxer himself, won a gold glove title back in the 60s. So that was Emmanuel. He just loved the amateurs and loved trying to help the kids and help making them write their lives, and he was very good at that. He did that all the way through his life, all the way up, and even till he passed away. But he was so tremendous in helping out the youngsters and working with kids, and that's something that's truly, truly admired.
Now, what kind of boxer could he have made out of Alex?
I don't know. I don't know if he could have helped Alex. I don't know if Alex would have chickened out on him or not.
A couple of shots to the nose, and that'd have been it. Huh?
Yeah, I don't think Alex would have got in the ring.
No way. One hit KO.
Yeah,
he did an awful lot. I was talking to Bob Every about it yesterday, and 68 years old—that's not old by any stretch of the imagination. But you know, he certainly left his mark. There's no question about that, and he will be missed.
Oh, yes, that's for sure. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR, 20 minutes after the hour from 1 o'clock. Jack, we'll let you go because we got to make way. We got more sports to talk about. No, we'll hold you for a little bit for the next segment. Can you stay a few more minutes?
I can stay about 10 minutes.
Okay. You're listening to radio station WKAR. We'll take a short break right here on AM 870 East Lansing.
If you think that monsters and vampires are make-believe, you have to tune in to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're going to have an author on who looks at the history of real zombies poisoned with a witch's brew of tree frogs and pufferfish. Also, the science behind the fear of vampires. Yeah. And how you can be scared to death, literally. You can. It's Trick or Treat on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday coming up on Talk of the Nation at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. I'm Scott Pohl. Here's the weather. It'll become partly sunny, and the high today will be around 53 degrees. Tonight's low in the low 30s, and it'll be partly cloudy. mostly sunny for both Saturday and Sunday. Highs will be in the upper 40s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And, Jack, one thing we haven't had a chance to mention, but the Big Ten held their media day for basketball on yesterday.
Right.
And, you know, Michigan State is not in the top three. I know Tom loves that when he's not picked high or picked to win or supposed to win, but he's not even in the top three. So will he need that extra incentive for his team? Because we know he's got a pretty good team this year.
Yeah, I don't think those numbers mean much. I don't think it meant much when they were picked to win it and didn't. I don't think it meant much when they were picked to win it and did. And I don't think it's going to mean much now. The fact is, there are probably five teams in the Big Ten that have a realistic shot at being in the Final Four, certainly in an Elite Eight. And don't sleep on Minnesota. I'm telling you, that's a team I think is really going to make some noise this year with Trevor Mbakwe back and a lot of good young players. So I look at the Gophers as being the surprise team in the league.
So that should be, the Big Ten and that, yeah, you're right. I think that, you know, when I look at the whole Big Ten, Michigan is going to be back. They're going to be a better team this year. And then also, you know, Ohio State's been picked up rather high this year. I'm not sure about Ohio State. They've got a few players back, and we know they got the kid from Detroit who went over there last year, the big kid. I'm just not so sure about Ohio State, but they seem to have a lot of people in the media seem to go along with them.
You know, we look at, well, who's back?
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily it, because sometimes you have guys back who don't get any better. Sometimes you've got really good players who are waiting behind a Jared Sullinger that don't get in the game. I think they've got two guys who are going to be first team all Big Ten. And to me, whenever you have Aaron Kraft, you've got a great chance to win because he changes a game defensively at the point guard position. So he's a guy I would want to start my team. And, you know, you talk about Keith Appling and you talk about Trey Burke and all those guys. But I saw the Michigan-Ohio State game in Indianapolis. And there was no doubt to me that there was one guy out there who was making a difference in that game. So I guess I like Ohio State as much as anybody does. I think Indiana is my favorite to win the national championship, a very deserving of a number one ranking. And there are other teams, too. You know, how is Michigan going to adjust? How are they going to come together now they have McGarry and Little Dog and see how they do? I think they're going to miss Zach Novak. And Stu Douglas, those guys gave him some senior leadership and some very good defensive play. So we'll see. But I think Michigan State has all the pieces, maybe more depth than it has, doesn't have a star, doesn't have a Draymond Green. And that's what a lot of the voters look at. I mean, I vote in all these polls, and I tell you, you can't know everything about every team, so you go by the names. But I don't know who's going to emerge for Iowa. I haven't seen them practice. I don't know who's going to do that. For Wisconsin, I can't say that I do. Maybe I'll know a little bit more after this weekend, but I think that Michigan State is in great position. If you ask Tom Izzo, he wouldn't trade his players for anybody's.
Yes, well, but he always says that every year.
Well, I think there's a good reason. He's got 11 players out there who, you know, think they're going to play and probably could play and would have been good enough to play and start on some of his best teams. So when you've got that kind of depth, he's got three terrific freshmen coming in. He's got depth in the front court. He's got, you don't want to say an injury-proof team. As soon as you say that, they'll get three stress fractures.
Yeah.
But they do have a lot of depth. They have a lot of guys that are going to have very competitive practices. I think that Keith Appling is a different player this year. He's shooting the ball much better. I think that Derek Nix has lost weight and Adrian Payne has gained it. I think that having Brandon Dawson back healthy ahead of schedule has been a big surprise, a big plus. So I think Michigan State's got a chance to have a very good season. And, you know, I'd be disappointed if they didn't. They're the defending Big Ten tournament champion. They share the regular season championship. And if Dawson hadn't gotten hurt, that wouldn't have been a tie. They were, I think, 16 points ahead when he went down, and then Buford didn't have a point, and suddenly there's no one who can guard him. So I think that Michigan State is in great position to have a very good season, and I would be surprised if they didn't have another 20-plus win year and be right there at the end in the Big Ten, maybe trailing Indiana. And I mentioned the other teams I think are going to be very tough, and don't forget about the Gophers.
Okay. Hey, Jack, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and I'll let you go, and we'll get back. We'll be talking a little bit over the weekend, that's for sure.
What's your World Series prediction?
Boy, that's a toughie. I must admit that's a toughie. I was sort of, picking up on the Tigers beating the Giants, and I had said the Giants a few weeks ago that the Giants would win it, but then when the Tigers made it to the World Series, I thought they would win it once they got in.
You're
now that they're in it. Yeah, I was a flip-flopping.
You run for president. You're all over the place.
Yeah, I was. And now I'm thinking, boy, they're down 2-0. I'm almost ready to go back to San Francisco again. I mean, it's baseball, as you know, such a weird game.
Would you please pick the Giants, because then the Tigers will win?
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll pick the Giants. Maybe that'll make it win for them.
There you go.
Okay, Jack. Hey, we'll talk to you later, buddy.
I'll call you from Wisconsin.
Okay. Yeah,
right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. And that's Jack Ebling. Let's go to the phones. We got Fred on line one. Fred, how you doing?
Fine. I wanted to talk to you while you had Jack there, but I want to talk a little bit about boxing. Mm-hmm. I remember watching Ezra Charles and some of the old, the guy from Sweden that was a world champ there for a while. But I think one of the best boxing matches I've ever seen was that Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti.
Mm-hmm. It was a good one. Their trilogy, all three of their fights were good.
I'm sorry?
All three of their fights were good.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them, who was it? Was it Ward or Gatti that retired after that?
Ward retired after, and Gatti kept going for a bit.
Well, he was... You know, he saw what it was doing to him, and what it had done to others to get out. That's a
horrible, tough sport.
Horrible thing to have happen. And a real boxing match, it seems to me, isn't to injure somebody. It's to get through their defenses. All they have to do is touch. But that's not the way they score the boxing matches.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's scored by who lands the most effective punches. That's how they score it. And of course, the main thing, if you're in a fight, the main thing you want to do is hit and not get hit. That's why they call it the sweet science. It's easy to some fighters are so aggressive on offense, and they don't pay that much attention to defense. That's what makes Floyd Mayweather so good, because he's a master of hitting someone and not getting hit. And that's what you have to do. There aren't many fighters that can do that pretty well. There's only a few of them. He's one of them. James Toney used to be a master of that. But there are few fighters that can master hitting and not getting hit, but that's what you got to do.
Well, have you ever seen a match that would come close to that Gatti Ward?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of them, because both those guys were very offensive, so both of them landed a lot of punches. Neither one of them, if you put them in, you could put them in a 3x3 box, and they'd hit each other, or in a 20-foot ring, they still hit each other. But they were good fights, and they were just very aggressive offensive fighters. That's what pleases the fans and the boxing public. They love to see a lot of action, and those two fighters both gave you both a lot of action when they were matched against each other.
Well, that's true, because the boxing matches I've watched are usually they're floating around, and you're right, they're looking for a place to get in and not get hurt.
Mm-hmm, that's
but,
it. Mm-hmm.
But I just thought I'd put my 2 cents in there.
Okay, thanks a lot, Fred.
Yep.
We appreciate it. Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye. And that's Fred talking a little boxing here on AMA 70. We're going to have Dave Mayo on with us in about 10 more minutes at 1:40 to talk and discuss Emmanuel Stewart and what a great trainer Emmanuel Stewart was, and a great person, in all honesty, a great person and a great trainer. He did both, and we'll talk a lot about that. We'll discuss it with Dave Mayo from MLive.com. Dave has known Emmanuel for quite a long time and covered him in a lot of the fights that he had. And so we'll discuss Emmanuel Stewart at 1:40, about 10 more minutes, right here on AM 870 WKAR. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. As you know, we come your way each and every day, Monday through Friday, from 1:05 to 2 o'clock, right here on WKAR. Well, Alex, were there any of the picks that we made that you disagree with us? Did you pick any of them different from what we picked?
You know what? There are so many good games this week, Earl, and so many toss-ups, because it's not that, you know, it's not like Michigan's playing Indiana this week. These are tough games. These are up-in-the-air games. And, you know, there are picks that you guys even made that I would make a bold call and disagree with all three of you. And one game in particular that I would disagree with most certainly is the Ohio State-Penn State game.
Okay.
With Braxton Miller and his injury, as well as Ohio State did play. Remember last week, Earl?
Yeah.
They had a close game.
Yeah,
very, very close game. And with Braxton Miller out and with his injury, I don't think it's going to be that easy to pull a game out on a Penn State team who's looking pretty good lately.
Yes, they are. But I have to say, Ohio State's, they're 8-0, and that's for a reason, because they've played very well. They played very good defense. And that's the thing. They play very good defense for a team that's 8-0.
They do. They do. And, mm-hmm. and with the way that Penn State has gone this year, with everything that's happened with their program, I think at Happy Valley, at home, I think this win will signify their whole season. I'm going to call it. I'm going to say Penn State beats Ohio State.
Okay, yeah, and you have a lot of company on that. That's true. And like even Drew says, that's their ball game. And Jack says that also. That's Penn State's ball game. That's their ball game for the year. And yes, I believe they could win that game. They've gotten better and better each week. But it's something about going up against a team like Ohio State. So I have to go with them. When you go up against Ohio State, especially when they're on a run now, because it's their bowl game too, in essence, because they're not going anywhere this year. So, you know, I look at they're almost equal. I mean, except Penn State's got three more years after this of being ineligible for bowls and such. But I'll stick with Ohio State. I think they're just good enough of overall talent to win this game. So I'll stick with them because of the overall talent. That's for sure. And any other games you see there that gives you cause to think you
swing the other way? Yeah. I'd say the only other game, I'm going to agree with you on Wisconsin. I think they're going to edge out Michigan State. The only other game that I would maybe disagree with is, I think, Michigan. And Nebraska, obviously, they're at home.
Yeah.
There's a lot going in their favor. Taylor Martinez, you know, he's obviously going to pick apart that defense at Michigan. But what I would say in response to how this team will do on the road, you know, it's very untested, you know, how this team performs on the road this year.
Oh,
most of
true.
Michigan's big games, they've won at home. But the reason I think they will win this game is not necessarily the fact that, you know, the defense is going to shut down Taylor Martinez. But what I think will happen is I think Michigan's running game against Nebraska's run defense will be very good.
Okay, and that could be very true. That's for sure. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, with the World Series coming up, boy, I think when we looked at the beginning of this, in all honesty, we thought that the Tigers would be in a good position to win it here, or actually they thought they would be able to close it out at home. But now nothing, they won't be able to close, they won't be able to close it out at home. That's for sure. The game will be going back to San Francisco for at least one game, maybe two. It's going to be interesting to see how these next three games. But the Tigers have gone back to not hitting like they were during the regular season. They just had a lot of games where they didn't hit well. And, of course, San Francisco was starting hitting at the right time. So it's going to be interesting these next three games in Detroit. Let's go to the phones. We got Cozy on the line. Cozy, how you doing?
Earl, how you been, man?
Okay.
That's good. Yeah, that was some sad news about Emmanuel Stewart. I really enjoyed his commentary on the HBO fights and whatnot. He really had a different kind of insight that made the fight interesting to watch. From his perspective, and I'm real disappointed in Lions. Tigers, from what I hear, they've been having trouble hitting that left-hand pitching all season long.
Yep.
So you know, maybe that's the thing that's going to take them out of here, you know, because they keep on bringing them lefties at them.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, and you can't blame them. That's what the other team has to do. If you have a weakness, they got it. You know they're going to try to exploit it.
Yeah, but we'll see how San Francisco does if they get out of their confines of AT&T Park and see how they do back in a little cold weather.
Yeah, I can't see them handling. I can see the Tigers winning three straight because I don't see how San Francisco is going to be able to handle all that cold weather. Yes, it gets cold in San Francisco, but not nearly as cold as it gets here.
Different kind of cold.
Yes.
Different kind of cold. Anyway, I just want to talk to you, man. Have a good weekend.
Okay, you too, buddy.
Right.
Okay, we'll talk to you later. And that's Cozy talking with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Now, you live down in Detroit way there, Alex. Did you know much about Emmanuel Stewart other than that he was a trainer, or did you know that much about him at all?
You know, I know a little bit about him. I know what he has done with Kronk Boxing. I know that was a big, you know, a big milestone and set thing for the city. I mean, I've just heard so many stories and legends about how he's impacted the world of boxing, and it's so sad. Like Jack said, he's young. I mean, that's not a very easy age to pass away at, and obviously it comes as a shock to many people. I think that, you know, boxing will definitely change with him not here. Not necessarily him being involved in boxing, but I think his impact and him being around is more of a spokesperson than a model for boxing. Do you agree, Earl?
Oh yes, he was a big spokesperson for boxing. You know, he carried that mantle proudly, and it served him well. And he was passionate about the sport. That's the thing. People that are in the sport, a lot of them are very passionate. He was one of those persons that was very passionate and really loved the sport of boxing, loved boxers, and he loved helping the people and a lot of the kids who came from difficult backgrounds, and he helped a lot of them out. So, hey, my hat's off to Emmanuel Stewart because he did a lot for people and a lot for the people in the city of Detroit. So that was special, Emmanuel Stewart was. Hey, give us a call. It's 38 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. We're going to be making contact shortly with Dave Mayo from MLive.com. But first off, stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Can Twitter predict who will win the presidential election? I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look at how social media can influence politics. Plus, the Sci-Fi Book Club celebrates the wit and wisdom of Richard Feynman. Surely you're joking, Mr. Feynman. It's on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday on Talk of the Nation, coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
It'll become partly sunny today, and we'll have a high in the low 50s. Partly cloudy tonight, the overnight low around 32 degrees. Mostly sunny for both Saturday and Sunday, cooler with highs of 48. This is Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. So give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. But more importantly, we need you to spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sport every afternoon right here on WKAR East Lansing. And we're trying to make contact with Dave Mayo now and get with him and see what he has to say about the late, great Emmanuel Stewart. And I have a couple of stories. One that I wanted to share with you. It really wasn't a big story, but I was judging a fight. Emmanuel was there. He had a few fighters on this undercard a few years ago. And one of the things, he one of the fighters that he had couldn't fight that night. He didn't pass all the tests that he was supposed to to take. And but you know, we understood it. And I, being the fact that I was the probably the only commissioner there at the fight, so I had to talk with him, being a member of the boxing commission. And he came to me and we talked, and he probably knew that, you know, they weren't going to give us his fighter a pass. I'm pretty sure he knew that. He didn't put up a big fight out of. Big argument about it, but he was fighting for his fighter, which he was supposed to do, and he fought for his fighter. He made a good case, and of course I couldn't let him fight that night. But it was just an interesting conversation, and I was so impressed with the man who stood up for his boxing, even though for his fighters, even though his fighter couldn't no way could we give him a shot at fighting that night. So it was just tough for this one fighter. He had brought about five or six fighters to this one card, and he was the one fighter who was going to fight on the card, but he couldn't he didn't qualify. So you know, we couldn't let him fight, but he still fought for him. And that's the thing about Emmanuel. You love him because he always stood up for his fighters and stood up for his players, even if you know, even if they weren't able to fight or whatever. He was a truly champion of their cause. And yes, the guy came from he was a fighter that he had managed out of Ohio, and he came to Detroit to fight. But this night he wasn't able to do that. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Of course, spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR East Lansing. And we're waiting for, what, do we have him there? Oh, he's not there yet. Okay, got to wait a little bit more. We get Dave Mayo on, and actually he's almost on. And we'll have him on to talk boxing with Dave very shortly. We're going to try him again. Dave is, of course, known all the Mayweathers and everything else. He's got a ton of boxing knowledge. He's one of the best boxing writers in the nation. And so we always love to have Dave on and to hear what he has to say. And yeah, we got him now. So let's bring in Dave Mayo. Dave, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, you're all good. How are you?
Hey, feeling good, and not feeling that good because, you know, we lost such a great an icon in the sport, Emmanuel Stewart. And I was just telling the fans that, you know, he was so thought so well of among people. I mean, he really was a special person.
Yeah, you know, he was even when he became royalty in boxing to the point where he couldn't go anywhere without being recognized. It was never uncommon to see him locally at a Silver Gloves or a Junior Olympics event or a Golden Gloves event, beating the bushes, pounding the pavement, doing his due diligence to not only to find talent but to keep grounded in the grassroots of the sport. He was a guy, you know, he was an everyman. I guess that's what I'd say about Emmanuel. He never big timed anyone. He was just a guy who was he was an electrician who decided to create a boxing gym and use one to sustain the other until such point as it became bigger than I'm sure he ever imagined it to be. And as a trainer, as an announcer, he was a Hall of Famer in every respect.
Yes, and one reason why we always loved him, because he always stayed true to the amateurs. He was an amateur, a strong fighter, a very good amateur fighter. I think he was 93-4 in his amateur career, and he always liked the kids to get in, and you know, and he kept them. If they wanted to stay in the amateurs, he worked well with the amateurs just as much as he did with the pros.
Well, what he understood, and a lot of people in pro boxing lose sight of after a while is, and I include trainers, I include officials, I include a lot of people in that, is this is, you know, boxing, the little league and the major leagues, there's not always that big a separation. It's a handful of years and a handful of guys who make a difference in the sport. And if you can define those and maintain those relationships, you have a lot better chance of succeeding as a pro. That's just reality. I mean, amateur boxing and pro boxing are completely different sports that are almost inseparable, because exactly the same people are involved for the most part, in both of them, and certainly on the grassroots level they are. And he never lost sight of that. He was always a guy who believed in building a ground game and creating something. He never intended Kronk, Earl, to be a pro boxing gym. I mean, not to say that he didn't intend to have pro fighters, but that was an amateur program at a city recreation center when it started. It wasn't. He didn't have visions of creating, you know, the fifth professional franchise in Detroit for a while, which is what it was when, you know, Kronk fights were on TAS TV every weekend. And we became so familiar with those fighters because there'd be 20-plus Kronk-featured shows, pro boxing shows, televised across Michigan every year. It was a completely different atmosphere, and the atmosphere was created by, at its core, Emanuel Stewart with, you know, his fighters and a promoter, Bill Kaczorski, and an infrastructure there. But at its core was an amateur boxing gym that just grew beyond all bounds.
Yes, that's for sure. Hey, we've got a caller for you. Let's go to the phones. We've got Dennis on the line. Dennis, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Earl?
Okay.
Dave, how are you? Hey, good. How are you doing? Good. I enjoy your conversations with Earl on the show when I read your writing, and I appreciate you being on today. Earl, Jack Ebling asked you a question a little while ago, and he wanted you to talk about what made Emanuel Stewart unique. And I want to chime in on that right now. But before I do, I just want to say that, in my opinion, if you look at the great trainers in boxing history, Angelo Dundee, who had Ali, and Sugar Ray Leonard, Ray Arcel, who had Jack Dempsey, Eddie Futch, you know, Freddie Roach, Jack Blackburn, who had Lewis, Customato, I think Emanuel Stewart is right there in that conversation. No hesitation on my part. What do you think about that, Dave?
Yeah, you're obviously an educated boxing guy. The minute you mentioned Jack Blackburn, going back to Sugar Ray Robinson days and the days when, you know, Joe Louis and Sugar Ray Robinson were haunting Detroit. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's not only because of what he did at Kronk, although it is primarily that he built a singular powerhouse from nothing. When he had to go on the road and become a hired gun trainer, Lennox Lewis was his absolute best when Stewart was training. Vladimir Klitschko, same way. Not the same could necessarily be said of Jermaine Taylor, but I think there were some inborn flaws with Taylor, and there just wasn't much of an opportunity to do any work there. That you can't fix everything. But I thought that Emanuel proved his worth by doing it a couple different ways, both staying at home and building a foundation, and then when necessary, proved he could be the, you know, the Freddie Roach, the Floyd Mayweather seniors, and be every bit as effective as anyone of that nature today is by going out and improving ready-made fighters.
Right. And I think that's where I want to go with answering Jack Ebling's question. Just my opinion. I think what made Stewart a great trainer, not a very good trainer, a great trainer, is he taught fighters how to be fluid, how to move naturally, how to use their own innate timing and sense of rhythm, and help fighters who never showed it, like the Klitschko brothers, how to develop that sense of timing and fluidity. And because of that, his fighters were hyper-offensive. I remember when Tommy first came up, I just graduated college, and that was at that point in your life where you have a little modicum of independence, and you and your boys get together, buy a keg of beer, and get the pay-per-view fight. And we were all big Tommy Hearns fans because him being from Detroit, he represented us. You know, I didn't grow up in Detroit, but a lot of my buddies did. And me being from Michigan, Tommy was our man. And Tommy was knocking cats through the ropes. He was knocking guys out. And that hyper-offensive style, that came right out of Kronk. It wasn't just sitting on your punches. It was a leverage that Stewart taught you to use based on your height or your hips or whatever attribute you had. His fighters, Hilmer Canty, McCrory, they were all very good offensive fighters. And I think that's what made Stewart stand out. And he taught these fighters, like you were just saying, Dave, in the later years, how to use some of those same techniques. I think his weakness may have been none of his fighters were particularly great defensive fighters, but they didn't have to be because their offensive skills were just so pronounced that it really made him stand out for me as a guy that I enjoyed watching his fighters fight and then listening to him comment during the fights. He was a gem, and he's going to be missed. And again, I think he's one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, I would just generally agree across the board with what he said. That you know, the thing that made him unique was the ability to find a strength within a guy and exploit it within his system. Whether it was, you know, a great hitter like Hearns or a really super aggressive guy like Mickey Goodwin, if he had a particularly robotic fighter like Klitschko, he was able to work with that. Or a particularly passive guy with great athletic ability like Lennox Lewis, he was able to work with that. So you can't change a fighter. A fighter is whatever his personality is, but he knew how to work within the framework of what the fighter brought to the table, and that's hard to do. It's something that's almost inborn with a teacher of any kind. He was a teacher more than he was a trainer.
Yes, and he really taught the one thing that I was with him on a training session one time, and he was demonstrating how he teaches guys to throw punches, and he said if you want to punch with power, he said you have to turn your hips, and he was showing us how to turn the hips and use the hips up into the arms, and you get that power from turning your hips the right, and he said put your hips in every shot. He just made sure you put your hips in every shot, and you could get great leverage, and boy, once you master that, you really, you know, that was really good because, boy, you get a guy who can turn his hips and put all his punch in one shot like that, it goes a long, long way.
Well, and you know, we're focusing completely on, pretty much completely on what he did as a trainer. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be able to step out and do it as a non-professional journalist announcer, that's what really brought him to the public. I mean, it wasn't the flash necessarily of being in the corner for Hearns and Leonard or Hearns and Hagler or whatever the case may be, Lewis and Tyson. It was all of those things combined with his everyman characteristics, his ability to break boxing down to where the layperson who happened to be watching on HBO some night could really understand something extra, something inside about what someone was trying to do, whether he or she was successful at it or not. And it just brought home boxing for a generation of people.
It did. He was such a special person, and you know, he really helped put Detroit on the map as far as boxing, or put it back on the map after Sugar Ray Robinson. You know, he brought it back with Tommy Hearns and his fighters. He made Detroit really, you know, people started mentioning Detroit John Robb with New York and Las Vegas is one of the fight capitals of the world here in the United States. He helped make that Detroit really big about that, made them basically big time.
Well, and it can happen almost anywhere as long as you have the right population size and someone with the willingness to do it. It's happened at many places. It happened in Philadelphia. It's happened in Grand Rapids for a while. You know, it doesn't have to be a huge city. It just, you can almost trace when you have a phenomenon like a city that for a period of time, 30 years or whatever, rises up as a boxing powerhouse. You can almost trace it back through the ages to like a singular trainer or a couple of guys who built it and taught other people who taught other people who taught other people, and they create this web of success around them. And for this era in Detroit, there's no question it was Emmanuel Stewart. There's no question in my mind.
Oh, that's for sure. And, hey, want to give us a call or keep Dave for a couple more minutes, 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And, Dave, you know, Manuel was so great, and I know we had talked to him. I talked to him several times. I think you probably talked to him as well on if we'll ever see a Pacquiao-Mayweather fight. And it's still not said, even though it seems like it's getting closer, that we might have that fight finally. Do you think that fight can be made to come in the spring of next year?
we have this same conversation every month.
We do.
I have absolutely no indication that it is any closer right now to happening next year than it has been happening in the last 2 years and 9 months that we've been talking about this subject. There is absolutely no indication of movement or talks between them.
That's a shame. I mean,
now is there back channel stuff going on? Is Mayweather talking to Golden Boy? Does Golden Boy talk to Arum? Maybe, but it's not going any farther than that right now. I know Mayweather and Richard Schaefer and Oscar De La Hoya are all in communication with each other on a regular basis, but they still have to cross that promotional divide. And how often that translates to any real talks between that side and the top ranked side, I question whether that has happened truthfully since January of 2009. January 2010. Mm-hmm.
And that's a shame. I mean, they could make a ton of money. I mean, probably be the biggest grossing fight in history. And, they're blowing it basically because they can't get together. I mean, I don't think we can imagine, like Hearns and Leonard. Yes, they after the first one, it took them 5 years to get together again, but they did get together again. And we saw him and back in the 80s, we can talk about a lot of great fights and fighters were willing to fight. I don't know why, but they were able to.
Well, and fighters weren't, too. Mm-hmm. Let's hold on that thought for a second, too. Mm-hmm. Hearns and Leonard didn't fight again for 8 years.
Yeah.
Hearns and Hagler and Leonard was put off for a long time. Mm-hmm. Hearns and Leonard happened early. They were both undefeated. I would have likened that fight to Mayweather and Diego Corrales, two undefeated guys early in their careers on the way up, but one was more marketable and Olympian than the other was.
Yeah.
And so that's the reason that fight maybe happened when it did. There are a lot of things that happen in boxing, and, we got a lot of fights in the 80s, but some of them were terribly delayed, and some of them didn't happen at all. So let's not pretend like this has never happened before. Whether this fight happens or not, I've come to the point with this whole Mayweather-Pacquiao thing, it's not going to affect my life one way or another. I've talked about this thing for 3 years. There's no movement on it. When they move, I'll be interested in it. But they have lost a chunk of people who wanted to see that fight and now are completely ambivalent about it. When it happens, maybe they can restoke that fire. But for the time being, until they start to talk and they start to care about it, I don't know why other people do.
Yeah, I don't think you're right. I don't think a lot of people are totally interested in it, or they'd like to see it happen. But that's all I say. Well, I like to see it happen, but they won't say any more than that. Except they hope it happens one day, and I think that's where I'm at as well. Hopefully, it'll happen one day.
We all do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that hasn't changed in 3 years. Everyone would like to see that fight happen next May, and if they're inclined to start to talk about it sometime in the near future, then that's exactly what will happen. And if they aren't, then it may be one of those, Riddick Bowe, Lennox Lewis things that we never get to see.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because my mouth was watering when I remember when that was talk of a Riddick Bowe and Lennox Lewis fight, especially in their prime when they were both undefeated, and then King started playing those games about one fighter not wanting to fight the other, or they would fight all these other guys, and hopefully they would match up later on.
And Rock Noon got involved both through the title belt and the trash can, but let's not sugarcoat history or airbrush it by saying that the greatest fights in boxing, the obvious fight always happens. The obvious fight doesn't always happen. Oh. History tells us that. This is the obvious fight. It's been the obvious fight for 3 years. We'll see if it ever happens.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Dave. I want to thank you for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and talking about Emmanuel Stewart today. We'll have you on again because we know you cover the Pistons, so we'll have you back on, and we'll talk a little Pistons basketball with you.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dave. We'll talk to you later, buddy. That's Dave Mayo from MLive.com talking sports with us. Hey, I'll be heading to the high school game tonight. I'll be heading out to Holt to check out Lansing Catholic Central tonight. Lansing Catholic Central is unbeaten, and they're in the playoff hunt. So we want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for calling. I invite you to come back tomorrow right here Monday, that is, right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR, East Lansing. We come your way each and every day. That's Monday through Friday, 105 to 2 o'clock, right here on WKAR. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and I'll see you on Monday right here on WKAR, East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.